Hey, welcome to episode 53 of the CTO Advisor Podcast. Pretty great episode. We have Val, and I'm going to completely butcher his last name, Berkovucci. I can never pronounce Val's last name, but we'll let him pronounce it for us. Sorry for the delay in getting some podcasts out. Unfortunately, we've had some technical difficulties, but you know what? We hope to make up for it with a great podcast on AI. I have my co-host Mark with me today. Mark, how's it going?
Doing pretty well. How about you, Keith?
Not as bad as you. You're coming off a really tough travel schedule, pure.
Yeah. Pure accelerate. So I'm coming off a, 5-hour red eye. So I'm a little tired, but I'm here and ready to talk to Val.
We're going to try not to get too geeky on this podcast. Val, you have a new title. You're coming off of the NetApp, CTO of SolidFire. You're now, what's the title now? Is it Chief AI Expert? What's the new title at the new role? Tell us a little bit about it.
So yeah, thanks, Keith. Other than co-founder, it's probably chief janitor and product manager and evangelist and everything but developer at Peritus.ai.
So Val, you're now the co-founder over at Peritus. You had a really prominent role here in the virtualization, cloud computing industry as the CTO of NetApp, SolidFire. You guys were talking about a lot of interesting stuff from cloud to edge computing. Obviously, NetApp has made some interesting announcements recently with hyperconverged. A lot of exciting stuff going on at NetApp, SolidFire. What made you leave such a prominent role for an AI startup?
That's a really cool question. I did have almost one of the sweetest gigs you can have in the infrastructure space. And one of the things I guess I realized is taking a look at my retirement plan going forward, the increasing pace of commoditization of the infrastructure space, both in the hardware and software level, was sort of an uncomfortable pace given my own retirement goals and plans. So I figured, for a long time, my background is actually development and data management and at the database and data warehouse level before NetApp and SolidFire. I kind of wanted to return to those roots and move up the stack. And when I looked around at all the cool tech trends, whether it's blockchain, IoT, edge, obviously cloud, scale-out systems, by far the most interesting and probably over time most impactful tech trend is artificial intelligence, the rebirth or the reemergence out of the AI winter enabled by machine and deep learning technologies. And I really, really wanted to dive into that space. And Peritus offered me the opportunity and I jumped at it.
So Val, let's talk a little bit about that deceleration or collapse of traditional IT infrastructure hardware. I'm coming off of Dell EMC World, HPE Discover, Interop. The theme has been the same, digital transformation and the ability for these traditional hardware providers to pivot and become a little bit more than what they are at value above the stack. I'm not 100% sold on this. I wrote this post on LinkedIn that I thought, throwaway inside baseball comment. Turned out, thing got over 30,000 views and really engaging commentary. Can you share your thoughts on that deceleration and what the change in IT infrastructure?
Wow, how much time do we have? That's a broad topic. But first of all, I want to congratulate you for the popularity of that post. It caught my attention as well. And I'm glad that you're, if not starting, certainly keeping this conversation alive. At a high level, I used to joke inside NetApp and when I talked to a bunch of my industry peers in various panels that part of the problem is what I call the burden of success. I think the infrastructure marketplace at both the hardware and the software level has enjoyed so much success that collectively, it has become a $1 trillion-plus market. That builds a ton of inertia in business models and particularly in sales models. And that's the inertia, obviously, is one of the main challenges most of these vendors face. On the other hand, we've really, that comment we had about, what are MBAs worth nowadays if they're older than about 3 years old? They're not worth much because business, particularly in, first world countries and the Western economies, business has evolved at such a pace. And then if you take a look at China alone, perhaps India as well, digital technology and a digital disruption is almost a native way to do business over in those economies, those major economies. So we are at this scope, I would say, and pace of change that is unprecedented. And when you narrow that down to what it's like to operate a modern data center, it is a challenging, daunting task nowadays, because most data centers for enterprises are in this transition phase. I hate to use the term hybrid, but they're accommodating both a lot of business critical waterfall-based, you know, systems of record that are essential to their businesses. But the only growth and the only interesting new revenue streams enabled to them are coming at them via agile methodologies and continuous integration, continuous deployment methodologies. And it's that scope of fundamentally different psychology of thinking about how to approach technology, and then agile by its very nature being an enormous pace of change, continuous change. That really is, I think, what you seized upon in your article there. It's confronting a lot of, you know, the IT departments at various vendors with unprecedented challenges, and it's confronting their vendors and some of the open source communities they depend on with, you know, equal scope of challenges, even though they're very, very different challenges. So it's an exciting time if you get bored easily like me. But you know, if you're someone that doesn't like change and like stability, you'd better find another hobby or another career.
I think people are finally starting to realize what we've all been talking about for a while, which is the value that IT brings isn't the technology, right? It's what we enable to the business. And that's, you know, why agile and that type of methodology driving business success is all, it's where all the new cool stuff is happening.
I agree. And yeah, it's actually, you know, this is one of the things that we're seeing at Peritus is, if nothing else, you know, putting aside the scope of the change and focusing just merely on the pace, that pace of change is causing, you know, fundamental instability within data center environments. And if you take a look at one of my favorite Google searches recently is merely the three words, data center complexity, and you hit I feel lucky just for just one hit, you basically get a curated feature snippet from Google, which highlights the fact that, you know, data centers have never been in a more complex state. And that's leading to instability and downtime and unpredictability. And that's really the business opportunity that we saw at Peritus, which is taking a look at this increasing pace of change, the resulting strain and stress it puts on support environments from both the customer and provider, you know, sides of the support equation. That needs to be fundamentally rethought and improved, because it's still a very open-ended, unpredictable experience for both sides. And that just, you know, it won't stand in this era of rapid change.
I think that's really where I think the value prop of the new technologies around AI and machine learning can really help help us manage our infrastructure. It's too complex to do like we used to. It's too complex to have storage admins and virtualization admins working together to try to drive this massive, complex environment that we've created, that we've all created to drive agile and those types of technologies. So it's really interesting as a way to help solve our day-to-day problems as people who run technology environments.
So Val, I was listening to a big retailer the other day. They're struggling with getting virtualized. So AI is one of those technologies that we absolutely need it. We need to extract value from the data that we have. Grocers obviously have a lot of AI. The infrastructures that we manage are just not up to snuff with it. And we have this issue of unevenly distributed capability. You have guys struggling to get virtualized, and now you're the really big players like GE and a lot of the financial services providers can use AI to their advantage. How do you see the role of vendors in helping us to close that capability gap?
Yeah, your question there made me instantly think of that comment, I think, William Gibson, the Generation X author, who said, the future is here, it's upon us, it's just unevenly distributed. And, you know, we saw that almost 10 years ago when big data was a buzzword. You know, now it's kind of a 10-year-old trend, and it went from just, you know, getting better queries and covering more unstructured data in your queries towards business insights. More advanced companies actually transformed that into business operations from all the data they were collecting. And now you're looking at not just predictive, but you're looking at what we like to call the cognitive trends and cognitive disruption, that machine and deep learning has enabled on top of that. So, you know, I think it really boils down to where you are in your maturity model of harnessing your data. Perhaps, you know, most businesses and retail is a tough example nowadays, as you know, most retail in terms of traditional brick and mortars in severe decline. A lot of stores are closing and the margins were tight in that business anyway. And Amazon is clearly teaching everyone a thing or two about what, you know, retail is looking like in the future. But generally, it really comes along, you know, your maturity model of realizing, you know, am I in one of these businesses where data supports my business as it has in the past? Or am I at a point where I've realized data is my business? You know, I might be in the airline business, I might be in the retail business, I might be in the manufacturing business. But, you know, if I'm not harnessing my data, if I don't have a maturity model where, you know, I'm driving the data versus the data driving me, then I'm going to be in a world of hurt, and I'm going to be perhaps one of those blockbuster type headlines as opposed to a Netflix style headline.
So when you start talking about data, one thing we've been talking about for a while in technology is, of course, big data. What about this notion that people may not always have big data, they just have too much data?
That's a great notion. I, you know, I used to comment a lot earlier on, because data warehousing was a thing of mine 20 years ago when I was with NCR Teradata, that, you know, big data and data science are two different things. And the ability to extract value out of data should really be independent of the size of data. And that's when you're a real good data scientist, and when you're really good at statistics, and you're really good at, you know, probability and so forth. On the other hand, you know, nowadays we've kind of seen that it's okay to be lazy. It's okay to just use the advantage of, you know, what Google used to say in the early days, you know, having a lot of data will beat a smart algorithm any time of the day when it comes to searching and getting insight. So using the brute force we have that's economically accessible to most people in terms of raw compute power, raw storage power, and just, you know, raw analytics services online at very granular intervals, that really should be the modus operandi for almost any business nowadays, is, you know, innovate early on in a very experimental, you know, fast fail, fast learn environment. Find out what you can, you know, what you don't know. Find out what you could extract from this data that you've been ignoring and perhaps maybe at best archiving in the past. And you know, really push yourself in terms of developing new revenue streams and new business models in your business. The support business is a great example where we're seeing now that, you know, people, whether they're vendors or customers that are leveraging AI for support, are actually able to come up with new support entitlements that can be sold and consumed. You know, in the old days, that unit of delivery of support used to be tied to the time slice of a human. How much, you know, time can an escalation engineer devote to diagnosing, triaging, and diagnosing a complex problem? How much time can they devote to actually documenting a new recipe for resolution of a new type of incident? And how much time would a field engineer or an on-site resident in a data center have towards applying that fix? Nowadays, when you can have essentially virtualized expertise for all this domain of technical knowledge, and you can time slice, you know, you can slice up individuals' time into any unit of granularity you want because you're delivering that service virtually, you can shrink wrap and combine different skill sets that were never possible before in terms of support delivery on a new entitlement. Or you can offer, you know, a virtual on-site resident, if you will, as opposed to a physical on-site resident, to resolve complex problems. And you can do that at price points that aren't tied to the fully burdened cost of an individual. So there's innovation available across the spectrum. And, you know, we're happy at Peritus to just be focused on that supportability part of it all.
So, Val, walk us through the life cycle of when the decision to leverage AI is made and to go from an organization that collects data to an organization that uses data as a key portion of their business strategy, and how that eventually impacts the technologist force.
So what I've often seen is that it very much is the business that makes a decision. It's ironically rarely the IT or, you know, whether it's IT or OT departments, it's very rarely those that are making the decision. It's mostly a sales team that really just wants, you know, a better sales funnel and managing their pipeline better. A marketing team that wants to get from, you know, theoretical funnels towards actual tangible numbers as, you know, leads progress through a marketing funnel. or a manufacturing team that just wants to optimize their production processes a lot more, or get to a tangible QA metric by digitizing their QA process. You know, if you're like a smartphone maker, taking pictures of the assembly line of your devices as they're going from, you know, raw component assembly towards integration towards final assembly, and making sure that you're adhering to strict quality metrics all the way through your manufacturing process. There's all sorts of examples of departments in business that are motivated to go digital. And it's often, you know, it used to be, I would say, 10 years ago when cloud and big data were new trends, you'd see that it would be the IT department and the networking team and the storage team might be the last to know. Nowadays, of course, there's been so many articles written and so many good keynotes and breakouts at all the conferences we're attending that IT departments are getting more proactive. Individuals with specific technical skill sets are forcing themselves into the business conversation and are realizing now that, you know, most of the technology skills they have over the past, you know, first half of their careers aren't really that useful at a hands-on level. But some of the knowledge they've gained in terms of applying algorithms, you know, the lessons learned in introducing new technology back when desktop PCs and networks and enterprise were a new thing, you know, 15, 20 years ago, those lessons learned really never go away. It's just the technology has changed. And I think, you know, that's what I've seen over and over again, is that the business is driving the change. Technology teams are definitely evolving and adapting to keep up by and large. And that old adage, I think it was, you know, Simon Crosby or someone at a cloud conference about 10 years ago was saying that the pace of adoption of these new technologies is directly related to, you know, the years from retirement of the IT staff. So, you know, the younger IT staff is always motivated and hungry to learn new things, whereas anyone that's got retirement in their line of sight really just wants to keep things the same and will probably continue to support systems of record and perhaps ironically even watch their salaries go up as COBOL skill sets become more scarce and more valuable at the same time.
So Val, with adding the business to the conversation in this area that typically would be highly technical, there seems to be some, let's use the word confusion around who the buyer or customer of AI is. You know, we've talked through the marketing department, but at the same time, we have the enterprise IT silos, etc. So as you engage customers in this highly technical product or offering, who is the end customer? What's the integration points within the customer?
So it's often, it's actually been the engineering department. We sort of have a concentric circle of customers that will evolve over time, or target customers that evolves over time. Our first sort of inner ring of customers at Peritus is actually hardware and software infrastructure vendors into the data center. And so a very common use case or scenario that a lot of the engineering departments from those vendors come to us and say is, help us identify potential systems at risk or customers with systems at risk using inference as opposed to just pattern matching tools that we've used in the past. So essentially, we will help you train Peritus on our products. We'll give you our product documentation. We'll give you our interoperability guides with our partner vendors, our best practice guides for configurations and deployment. We'll give you our support case notes. We'll give you access to our public and maybe even private, you know, bug management system, defect management system, so that you can look at the bug descriptions and severities there. And we'll let you build cognitive models, you know, and not just build an expert or knowledge system as in the past that's passive, but actually build neural networks, you know, and knowledge graphs that can take that knowledge and apply it to, over time, an arbitrary set of workflows, but initially a set of support workflows where those cognitive models, those neural networks, have the domain knowledge to make the right decisions at every junction point in a workflow flowchart. So if, you know, a common workflow would be, I've got an app that's not responding according to the SLAs, the stereotypical or classic now Amazon 130 millisecond response time, where anything slower than that feels slow to a human and they turn away to another tab or another page. So if you've got an SLA threshold that's being violated, you basically have an infrastructure or an application monitoring solution triggering that threshold, triggering an alert based on that threshold. And that alert has a process or a policy in place to initiate a workflow. lets you ServiceNow, which is a popular vendor in this space. A monitoring solution will trigger a workflow, a support workflow within ServiceNow. ServiceNow will log and acknowledge that incident, and will then go ahead and look at, you know, either assigning it to an individual or perhaps now assigning it to a support as a service, you know, offering such as Peritus. And so programmatically, that ServiceNow workflow can instantiate us. We can take a look at all these other APIs we have at our disposal from the monitoring solutions, from logging systems like Splunk, from the domain knowledge we've gained, and we can initiate our own support workflow to triage and diagnose this particular new incident, to look at, you know, whether it involves a storage layer, a network layer, a database layer, perhaps a load balancing layer, and continue to trigger off effectively a chain of workflows. And as you can imagine, this technology is only as strong as its weakest link in that chain in terms of how automated it can be. But as we trigger off a chain of workflows and we have the domain knowledge and we continue to accumulate it, to make a decision at every junction point in a flowchart, we can pretty much go almost end-to-end in terms of diagnosing that problem as maybe being like a bad network configuration between the app tier and the database tier, and some slower network now because of a bad route is slowing up a query from a database. We can discover all that programmatically, and depending on the maturity and confidence of the autonomous data center environment, we can either present the resolution for that situation to a support engineer, an escalation engineer, and they can be the ones to apply the fix. Or as these models mature, we can probably apply the fix ourselves. You know, anything short of having a robot pull an actual bad drive from a rack in a data center and put a good one in, and I'm not saying we won't do that in the long-term future, but anything short of that, you know, when it comes to software configuration changes at the hardware and software level, we can have Peritus go end-to-end and really resolve those kinds of problems as it learns more and more about the environment.
Val, where can people find Peritus on the web and more about you and your musings?
So we're still, ironically, actually building out our website. I think it's a real testament to the power of social media that I was able to get our LinkedIn profile, our Twitter profile, and even our Facebook profile. I was able to get that up to speed in almost no time at all, but it took me a little bit longer to navigate the intricacies of the AI domain and how that actually redirects to a GoDaddy WordPress site and what it's like to bring that up. So the web technology is kind of showing its age. But you can pretty much Google us at all those locations. It's obviously www.peritus.ai for the website, and it's simply just Peritus, you know, space AI, and all the other social media sites. We should be able to come up pretty quickly.
All right, Mark, and where can folks find you?
You can find me at virtualstoragezone.com or, as always, on the Twitters as @CincyStorage.
As always, you can find me on Twitter at CTO Advisor and on the web, thectoadvisor.com, where you can also find the podcast and blog. Subscribe to us in iTunes or your favorite podcaster, and please leave us some feedback on iTunes. It really helps with discoverability. Talk to you guys next episode.